Politica culturali, Mihai Karsten Schwierer.
Din akum, l-axar program, fitti reċensiela, u għal-ekranki għal-issa l-axar sensiela, fis-serie il-politika kulturali, Mihai Karsten Schwierer. Għal dan l-aħħar program nixtieq nibqa' niftaħ ftit il-perspettiva tiegħi u tagħkom nittama dejjem hemm fuq id-dinja varjata ħafna tal-politika kulturali li iva tmiss m'aspetti li forsi wieħed imdorri bihom fid-dinja tal-kultura, tal-arti, anke forsi aspetti oħra ta' soċjoloġija jew antropoloġija, dak li ċertu drabi jissejjaħ slice of life, dak li huwa speċi cross section meta taqta' u tara dawk l-affarijiet kollha li b'xi mod jiffurmawna mhux biss bħala komunitajiet fil-lokalitajiet tagħna jew fil-pajjiż, manki b'mod iktar internazzjonali. Illum allura biex ala ser nitkellem ma' mixtieden li għandu esperjenza ta' Malta huwa bbażat barra proprju l-Olanda, però u stess huwa Katalan. Allura hemm dan it-taħlit kollu Ewropew Mediterranju wkoll illi dejjem iżid mal-esperjenzi li konna matul il-programm. Nilqa' miegħek il-programm, I welcome you, Jordi Vegas Macias. Hi Jordi.
Hi, thank you. Welcome.
Thank you for joining me for the show.
Yes, a pleasure. Thank you for the invitation.
You're very welcome. Jordi, you and I met because of something very particular, as happens many times. There are cultural projects going on, not necessarily cultural, as I was saying in the introduction today, in a definite or narrow sense, but it can be in a very general way. And the Pericles project that brought you to Malta, that brought you in connection very much with the fishing community and the coastal community of the south of the island, specifically Marsa Shlock. And we'll have some time to talk a bit about the project. In a way, to me, opened another window on the work. Your work as a researcher at the Wageningen University in Holland, but also other work that you do also as a consultant, active on a local as well as an international level, which is the story also of many other people, including many other people who have featured on these three series of programs of cultural policy, which is sort of going from the particular to the general, and back to the particular. And in a way, policy, which can be very specific, let's say at the moment there is a national cultural policy consultation open in Malta, but at the same time it can also have guiding principles, main values, which it tries to address and implement through a general approach, which however looks very much at particular communities and their everyday challenges, difficulties, but also what makes them gel together, what brings them together. And I wonder whether we could start our conversation by referring a little bit to the Pericles project, which was very much about participation, governance, definitely not top-down, but more of a roots project and looking at the differences and similarities between different coastal European and Mediterranean communities, and then maybe, you know, as our conversation progresses, try to take a few more general principles out of this work. How does that sound?
No, that sounds good. Like your framing, so I think we could work around this, and as you already mentioned and explained really well, the Pericles Heritage Project had the one of the main intentions was indeed to steer this participatory processes in the involvement of coastal and maritime cultural heritage management, but also how to find ways to better use it, also not only for recreational, but also for own purposes as part of the identity of the place, right, and the community. So yeah, in this particular case for Malta, we've been also looking more at the different ways in which participatory processes could be done. And obviously we had this first approach to build up from the community, but also from a holistic approach. So that was what kind of our main ideas, in the sense of bringing together different sectors and different views and perspectives on how to deal with some of the challenges and the threats around preserving and sustainably exploiting the heritage in the coast. So in the case, we have a combination of fisheries department, but also heritage expertise and tourism, but also representatives of the local council, but also of the community of Marshes Log, as well as artisans and so, in order to see how best how to steer this dialogue and this discussion around what is actually there in relation to coastal and maritime cultural heritage, but also how to make this process more open and participatory in that sense too. So we had this clear vision from the beginning that we were there as a more independent body, so to say, and then we also let the whole process to fluctuate in one direction or another. So that was a bit what Pericles is about in a general sense. And of course, we found Marshes Log a really, really perfect case for it, right? As everyone knows, Marshes Log, I think, is the most representative. Maybe I'm wrong, but maybe from my perspective, as also for Mediterranean and foreigner, I think Marshes Log concentrates quite a lot of elements of what we call CMCH, so coastal and maritime cultural heritage, in one particular area. And also, we realized that tourism is also quite an important factor in the area. So we wanted to look at both dynamics to see how they interact with each other, but also what's the role of the community in participation in order to deal with some of these challenges.
What were, in fact, the main challenges that you identified?
Yeah, I remember we had this kind of a cross-sectorial dialogue with many actors from Malta and from Marshes Log. That was back in October 2019, if I'm correct. And of course, we identified two main streams, let's say. And one was more about the seafood identity, like more related to culinary heritage, gastronomy. And we realized that, of course, Maltese gastronomy is a multi-layered heritage of many influences from many different parts of the Mediterranean and history. But when it comes to seafood and more coastal gastronomy, it was quite acknowledged that there was not enough discussion around it, and there was not enough awareness on how to connect this identity also with the coast, because we all know about the famous rabbit or the chira or other Maltese culinary identity banners. But when it comes to seafood, we have the lampuki, but we also acknowledge that there were more beyond the lampuki. So we also wanted to work more around the identity and the reconnection. So I think that's the right word, more in terms of reconnecting with the coastal gastronomy, but also in terms of sustainability also. So,
yeah.
So in regards of local fish species, Maltese fish species, but also sustainable fish consumption. So that was one of the challenges we identified as a group. And the other one was more related about how to sustainably exploit coastal and maritime heritage in the particular case of Marshes Log, to make it more visible, because we realized there is a lot of tourism, but sometimes information is a bit hidden, or there are not many stories about the heritage of the place. You can find something in internet, but there, you know, is really visible, but sometimes it is not fully connected. So we also wanted to look and explore for opportunities to diversify and to create experiences around.
Yes. And develop these stories, which maybe are there, sometimes not known. You remind me of one of the guests on a previous program, Jimmy Grima, who at the time of speaking is also living in the Netherlands, but with his colleagues, with his friends in the collective Rubber Bodies, had worked on the tales collected by Lely Psyla, sort of 20th century and even before, stories of fishermen between Martha Schlock and elsewhere in Malta and Sicily and the islands around Sicily, and developing sort of a theatre performative program together with the community. And another person who you remind me of, who was also on this series, who you know, Glenn Calleja, Gilbert. Gilbert Calleja, who always, even in his recent work, photographic work with Martha Schlock, speaks about the way how to approach a community by being external to the community, as in your case, as in the work of many cultural practitioners, who, however, find a lane, taking you into some stories, into time elements, and sometimes communities respond or don't. But when they do, this sort of treasure trove sometimes opens up.
Yes. No. Yes. Absolutely. I mean, I have to be thankful too, because I had really good collaboration and really open and active stakeholders, and especially particularly the community representative of Marshall's Log as well, but also Alicia Side also has been quite an important connection for us, because in order to know more about the dynamics of Marshall's Log and Alta, but indeed, this opened like a new way of doing participation and involving the community in this co-creation of experiences. So we steer a bit with the ideas, but there were also them who were like the community who was also telling the stories and capturing the images and in a way creating the whole initiative, which aimed also not only for this participation element, but also to capture all this value in a way. Mm-hmm. So we found a possibility to capture this value through creation of heritage trails and, you know, how you guided walks that can be done now in Marshall's Log, and they are available online. And it's quite impressive to think that all the content that is there is content that has been crowdsourced by the community, because these are the stories of the community, and they're making visible all the heritage elements of Marshall's Log. So that's, I think, quite important. And I think this is a success from the project, but also a success, I would say, from the community itself in how do they
who are the owners, sort of, and the stewards.
Absolutely. 100%.
Jordi, let me pause you just a second there to stop ourselves for a breather and come back in a moment. Thank you. Illum qed nitkellem ma' Jordi Vegas Macias, kollega Katalan li jaħdem l-Università ta' Wageningen. Kif ġismajtu fl-ewwel parti tal-programm, nitkellmu ftit fuq proġetti ta' partecipazzjoni u proġetti ta' governanza illi huma prinċipi importanti ħafna għal min speċi speċjalment segwa programmi oħra din is-sensiela. Jordi, there I'm saying how important the principles of participation and governance are when one addresses cultural policy from a theoretical point of view, but also from a practical point of view. We've spoken quite in detail about Pericles. If you have to refer to also other experiences of yours, your work as a researcher, as a consultant, also looking in a general way at what you perceive to be maybe the main guiding principles in your practice, in research, would you agree that participation and governance, and when the two come together, really lie at the core of most interesting work currently?
Yeah, initially, shortly saying, I would say yes, because indeed there are, it's where innovation comes. It's also a source of creativity, but also it's a matter of including the voiceless, so to say. And that's quite important nowadays. Otherwise, I have the feeling personally that we would do kind of the same all the time. So we will be walking in circles. And in order to not break the circle or not reinvent the wheel, but at least to include fresh or other perspectives, I think participation is it's important in general. So, but at the same time, it's important to realize that the participation processes, they don't have to be also not forced or not have to be obligatory just for the sake of participation. So that's something to be aware of. So the participation also is a really broad term, and sometimes participation means that you are allowed to participate in elections and that's it. So it doesn't mean that you are involved in the whole process of participating. So and in the sense of culture and heritage, because it's something that is not owned by anyone and it's universal.
I think shared in a community.
Yes, I think more voices and more perspectives should be at least included in at least deal with certain topics around how to handle it or or how to use it or what opportunities are there, and those should be more openly shared. I think.
Yes, you really struck me when you said if you take the democratic principle. Which, as we know, is also in a way under threat because of the pandemic of COVID, because of restrictions, because of people feeling they maybe cannot participate so much and have access to cultural life, social life, and the practice of democracy, which goes beyond voting in local or national elections, for example. And we've seen many protests, also physical, also sometimes going against certain regulations because of restrictions into place in many places around the world. And somehow one can be critical of that and say that's not right, and it goes against principles for safety, security, and health. On the other hand, however, one also needs to appreciate that it may not be enough for people to be given the opportunity to maybe give their opinion and stop there without following it up, without seeing that actually something goes through. And the fact that you are from Barcelona and the region around there for Catalonia also brings to mind many colleagues of mine, including my PhD tutor from the University of Tarragona, who in a way incarnate the spirit, this I find very European spirit, of wanting to lead the way. And somehow people in power and positions of delivering a political program, for example, need to listen. And maybe they need to follow more than pretend to lead. And I find this also applies to the cultural field. I wonder whether you would agree with that.
No, very absolutely. I mean, in that sense, that one of the main, as we can see now, there's one of the main agendas also for Europe now. It's more about representation and inclusion, right? And
mm-hmm.
and also participation. So these are kind of the new lines of work for this new 2030, I believe. So they really want to make sure that the, all these dynamics are not a part of something that you have to do, but something that is already included as such. So I believe that indeed that participation and inclusion should be more like a normalized process. And the pandemic also brought us challenges, but also brought us opportunities to do so. Not to say that it will be all as it was before, or like we can restructure everything as a new whole thing. But at least it gives us this chance to think about what are we doing and how are we doing it, right? So how are we managing cultural heritage elements, and to what extent can we also preserve them in such circumstances, but also how we can think of ways of exploiting them, or like maybe exploit is not a word that I like more much, but maybe how to use them in a way that it brings more value to the community, and value mm-hmm. is also mm-hmm. including economic value, because this is also one of the challenges that communities face when it comes to cultural heritage. The economic value.
Yes. Jordi, we're nearing the last part of our program. And I find this a very short step to go from what we're talking about to the educational elements, the university structures that we operate in, and also many of our listeners somehow belong to. Mm-hmm. You mentioned also COVID restrictions, which have also, in a way, opened up new channels of education, of research, of collaboration, but changed them fundamentally through a number of circumstances, including restrictions on travel and on coming together to work together. And they also think of people in the education process, from very young children to professionals who keep developing and wanting to operate better within their field. I wonder, as concluding comments, whether you could say something also of where you see the education side of things and the university side of things, especially within the European context, which has been one of the strongest, I find, from my personal professional experience, areas of collaboration and very inspirational. On the other hand, however, as you said as well, I find it sort of very limiting to just think of going back to the way we were, or just using technology to solve what fundamentally are cultural problems and cultural challenges.
Absolutely. And I could refer like with a couple of own experiences, like and reflections we also had in the whole consortium of the Pericles project, is that the pandemic has brought an opportunity to make this digital transfer a bit quicker for this transition, but at the same time we all realized that there's a huge digital divide that needs to be tackled, and that means that not everyone is ready to make use of technologies in order to be active or to any institution such as universities, but also in the project itself, like it's quite challenging and it requires a lot of investment and effort to have these skills and to create more building capacity initiatives in order to make this digital divide narrow.
A bit narrower, yes.
Yeah, because we realize that's quite a big challenge, and I think this should be included at all levels, like educational, but also in terms of cultural heritage participatory processes, or like even in any other field. I think more attention should be focused on how we tackle this digital divide. So perhaps more courses or more, you know, at all levels or any capacity building courses or anything related that could improve these skills in order to make this gap a bit, less wider, as I say. Yeah, but I think this we realized that because unfortunately we had to analyze most of our actions this year and last year into online settings. So, and we couldn't be in Malta, and we had to carry on and with our, you know, action research and more participatory processes on in an online setting. So that brought us a lot of lessons to take and I think this should be something that could be considered at EU level. So, and I think education should help. So, of course, there is a lot of collaborations, but collaboration should also include also those who have not the capacities of yet to be in such environments. Because this environment, personally, I think it has arrived and it's not going away.
So in a way, it's a long-term plan that one needs to adopt to address changes which can be there for the long term.
Yeah, absolutely. I think societal change. I like to say sometimes that we had this digital transitions, and we had these three main impacts. So we had the creation of internet, right? And then we have the TIC technologies and the ICT technologies. And now we have the COVID, which also has a third sociological third kind of discovery or impact on this transfer. So, and we are in an environment that we have to live in, and I think that's quite important in terms of participation, in terms of cultural preservation, in education. So I stress this as one of the major points we acknowledge from the project.
Jordi, time flew as it always does. Thank you very much for being with me on on this final program.
Yes.
Kellimi għajl Jordi Vegas Macias mill-Università ta' Wageningen u mill-Katalunja. Naħseb fil-program tal-lum rappresentajna fit iktar perspettivi kif provajna nagħmlu matul dawn it-tliet sensi li tkollha. Nirringrazzjakom ħafna tal-kontu miegħi, tal-kontu mal-istudenti tagħna u nħeġġiġkom anki tissimgħu il-podcasts fuq is-sit ta' Campus FM. Ringraziamo e insieme con Sahid.